He's a member of the Blackstone.
Hey, colleagues, good morning. Members of the public, this is, what are we? April 10th, 2013, meeting of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. Colleagues, we have several work sessions today, bills to vote on. I should announce that Representative Wisman, given the outcome of last night's National Basketball Championship, has agreed to vote aye on every one of these bills.
That was Monday night.
I didn't win.
And as a result of the Monday night, I'm voting no on every one.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We have some Michigan grads. Anyway, we're going to start off today with a public hearing and eventually a work session on House Bill 3038, and that is the Back to Work Oregon bill. And I'd like to call up Rep. Gorsuch and Rep. Reardon, please, to present this bill to us.
Mr. Chair, congratulations. Yes.
Thank you.
Big time.
Sure.
Welcome, Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Denborough and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Gorsuch, State Rep for House District 49, which includes the cities of Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and, of course, Gresham. I'm glad to be here this morning to speak in support of House Bill 3038, which would appropriate money to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for work-ready communities programs, employer workforce training, and back-to-work programs. The knowledge that we need to do more to create jobs and help people find employment will come as no surprise to people in this room. The programs that this bill addresses are prime examples of programs we should be supporting. They benefit people by providing training in needed areas. They benefit businesses by increasing the skilled workforce they need. And they fund projects that are ready to go right now, which creates jobs right now, not months down the road. I urge the committee to support these programs because these projects support Oregon residents and businesses. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Rep. Gorsuch. Rep. Reardon, welcome.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me here. For the record, I am Jeff Reardon, House District 48, which represents East Portland and Happy Valley. Delighted to be here, and I will speak just briefly on this. I've had a long-time interest in career technical education. As you've probably heard way too many times, I was a high school shop teacher, spent a lot of time really concerned about how do we prepare high school students to enter the field of work, and really concerned about, you know, job creation and working with local businesses. I think those programs absolutely are vital. I've been working hard on those. But for the older, dislocated worker, we need something else. I think back of, you know, the mom that's perhaps that is maybe raising a couple of kids. She's struggling. She's maybe she's getting some assistance from the state or from her family. And a program like this can make a total difference in her life. Two summers ago, I went to Clackamas Community College. I took some classes with some guys that were retraining. And, yes, they were guys. A couple of them had been framers, and construction industry was way down, and they were retraining to learn how to be machinists. And it was a program similar to this, not the same program, but the idea is that they were preparing for jobs, union-level jobs in that case, where they could go to work, they could raise their families, they could help their kids go on to school. All those things that are so important to us. And I see this type of program being very similar to that. But even better, it creates a partnership between the state and the employers to get people back to work and help build that workforce. What's really neat about this is people that are being trained are already hired. They don't have that concern about going to school and then are they going to get a job? Are they not going to get a job? And in addition, there are jobs that are actually good paying jobs with benefits. So they don't have to worry about maybe getting off of welfare for a job that's paid less. So it's really a win-win. A lot of confidence on the behalf of the employers and the employees, and so I just see it as a win-win for everyone. During the pilot, the local workforce investment board did match the state funds with federal dollars and non-federal resources. But as you'll hear from the speakers to follow, the pilot's been a real success in a model for workforce development that really works. There is money for this program in the governor's budget. It was one of the governor's first five priorities to repair the economy. And let's Ways and Means will fill in the blanks on the dollars to be allocated. But right now, we just need and ask you to pass this on to Ways and Means. So please vote in support of House Bill 3038.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Thank you, Representative. Yes, Representative Greenlick.
A technical question. This looks like a Ways and Means bill, but it's coming not from Ways and Means. Right. Is it because this isn't current? I mean, why isn't this coming in one of those 50-dash-dash?
Right, and it probably will eventually be amalgamated into something else. But there was a request that we weigh the policy side of it, and so that's why it's here before us.
Thank you.
And I think, as you'll hear, it's pretty good policy.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Thanks. Colleagues, any questions of these gentlemen?
No.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's see who we've got. It's Workforce Development Day, so we must have Andrew McGough here. Andrew? and Karen Cook and Kevin Dahl, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Denbrough, for the warm introduction, the acknowledgement of my workforce fetish. members of the committee, good morning. My name is Andrew McGough, and I'm the Executive Director of Work Systems. We're the Workforce Investment Board representing the City of Portland, Multnomah, and Washington counties. I'm here today, however, wearing two hats, as I've been asked to represent the Oregon Workforce Partnership, the statewide association of workforce investment boards, and the hundreds of private sector, labor, economic development, education, community-based volunteers who align and coordinate our state and local workforce efforts. I'm here to express our collective support for HB 3038 and provide some information regarding the need for and success of the initiatives proposed in the bill. I would also like to commend Representative Gorsuch for introducing the bill and Chair Denbrough for his longstanding and great leadership on these issues. I thought I would frame my remarks today by reading a quote from an email I received from the president of a local machine shop, and I got this on April 5th, 2013, so this is really recent. And I didn't have an opportunity to talk to him to say if I could use his name, but I assure you, this is a real email. This is what the guy says. He says, "Picture a pool of water and the ripple is offshoring. It hit the other side and is now crashing against our shore. We are busier than we have been in 20 years, and we are not alone. Education is already too late. The ripple will surge back to the other side if we don't perform miracles now. Yes, we are hiring, but no, we can't find qualified workers. Go Made in USA." This is a sentiment I'm hearing from more and more companies lately, especially those in manufacturing and information technology sectors. These types of concerns are also not unique to the Portland metropolitan area, as many of my colleagues from other parts of the states have shared similar, though less poetic, stories. The strategies proposed in HB 3038 are in direct response to the immediate concerns, as mentioned by Representative Gorsuch, expressed by a growing number of employers. HB 3808 offers proven effective strategies that provide a tremendous return to the state, our workers, and our businesses. Work-ready communities and the National Career Readiness Certificate directly align workforce and economic development and provide a tangible way to understand the skills of workers, connect work-ready employees to available opportunities, and to develop services to rapidly improve skills in accordance with employer needs. The Back to Work Oregon program was one of the most successful initiatives I've been a part of in my nearly 20-year workforce development career. The original $3.28 million investment by the state was matched one-to-one at the local level, resulting in almost 1,400 Oregonians being placed into jobs at an average annual wage of nearly $30,000. This means that in 1 year, Back to Work Oregon participants earned almost $42 million and generated approximately $3.8 million in tax revenue to the state. Not a bad return. Reinvesting in Back to Work Oregon is a proven, cost-effective way for the state to support skill development and job creation, two things we desperately need. Reinvesting in the skills of incumbent workers through the Employer Workforce Training Fund is another proven, smart investment that increases skills, improves business competitiveness, and spurs job creation. In the first 3 years of this program, $9.7 million invested from the state was matched by $21 million in private sector funding. The combined investment trained over 23,000 Oregonians at an average cost per worker of approximately $1,344. As a result, approximately 19,500 jobs were retained and more than 2,300 jobs were created. Over three-fourths of participating companies reported increases in both productivity and competitiveness. Half of all companies reported reductions in operating costs and WeWork, and about a fourth reported reductions in cycle time and new capital investments. Despite improvement in our economy, there remains over 170,000 Oregonians unemployed. An investment provided under HB 3038 provides critical ways to build stronger workforce, increase our competitiveness, and put our people back to work. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions. And hearing none, I'll turn it over to Kieran.
Actually, yes. Actually, let me just jump in for a sec, Andrew. Do you have your testimony in electronic form that you could send to us at some point?
Absolutely.
That would be great. Thank you.
Yes.
It was full of very important statistics. I think that would be useful for the committee to have.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Denbrough and committee members. My name is Karen Cook, and I'm the training coordinator at ARE Manufacturing, located in Newburgh, Oregon. Our president, Alvin Albert, is also a member of the board of directors for Job Growers, which is our local workforce reinvestment board for Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties. I'm really excited to be here representing so many of the businesses that have received the value of these programs already. The benefit from the funding from workforce development is beyond description. For ARE Manufacturing, the Employer Workforce Training and Back to Work Oregon are critical components to our ability to train our new and existing employees into family wage earners with careers in manufacturing. Certified work-ready communities are also our invitation to the world that Oregon is open and ready for business. ARE Manufacturing is a contract precision CNC machine shop, and our internal on-the-job training program is perfectly suited for new and transitioning. I like the comments earlier about framers coming into machining. That's very applicable. the people that have the basic skills in physical science and applied mathematics. That's the key to transitioning into our manufacturing types of positions. Back to Work Oregon is the financial bridge to take that untapped potential and to create actual hands-on experience with the opportunity to build a career. It reduces the impact of cyclical demands on our cash flow, allowing improved long-term planning for us. On-the-job training allows us to utilize our slower production periods to train and prepare our employees to meet the challenges of new business in high-demand periods. Participation in the Mid-Willamette High Performance Consortium, which is sponsored by our job growers, is invaluable. For example, when we just had our membership meeting and this was reported out to us, 3D Plastics, located in Newburgh, Oregon, and they're an injection molding, custom injection molding company, hosted a consortium-sponsored setup reduction workshop facilitated by Gary Connor, who's a well-known lean champion and author. They reported that they received over a 50% reduction in their setup time, which translates not only into a higher profit margin on those jobs that were specifically evaluated, but they learned that they can apply those same techniques to other jobs, and there's business they've been turning away that they can now accept and grow their business because those jobs are now profitable with the reduced setup times. The other participating employees, because this is, it's the people from the consortium that attend and participate in the workshops. So we had employees from GK Machine from Donald, Oregon, Kettle Foods from Salem, Oregon, and of course ARE. They brought that experience and knowledge from the workshop back to their respective companies. And every time these guys come back from one of these workshops, they come back with that extra spring in their step and spark in their eye. They are now re-excited. They're not just coming to work every day. They're energized for what they're going to be able to do. Today's business environment requires flexibility and adaptability. A skilled, trained workforce provides that flexibility and adaptability. Employer workforce training, certified work-ready communities, and back-to-work programs are cost-effective ways for workers and employers to explore skill matches and opportunities. Workers find that good match, are able to make informed decisions about where and how to invest their hard-earned dollars in higher education, often with employer-supported tuition reimbursement. Employers are able to leverage those skilled, trained employees into new business and growth. Employer workforce training has helped us in all areas of our business operation, from customized Excel computer classes and human resources seminars to train the trainer and leadership develop to setup reduction and ISO certification. Those are all areas that help us become more competitive and productive in our business. For example, we reduced the average time to become a competent setup machinist from 5 years down to 2 years for the repeat jobs. The forum provided by the Mid-Willamette High Performance Consortium cultivates the atmosphere for business to help each other. We target those areas of mutual concern, areas of opportunity. We share information that resonates with all of our members. We are all truly in this together. And I very much thank you for the time and the opportunity to testify and share the benefits that we receive everywhere. I love my job growers.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. And we'll come back to you. But Mr. Dahl, welcome.
Good morning, Chair Dembro and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Dahl, executive consultant for Kaiser Permanente Northwest. I'm also a board member of the Region 2 Workforce Development Board in Washington and Multnomah Counties. I'm speaking today in support of House Bill 3038. Back to Work Oregon, Certified Work-Ready Communities, and the Employer Workforce Training Fund are key building blocks to build strong Oregon communities. Kaiser Permanente's vision is to provide high-quality, affordable health care to the communities that we serve. One way we execute this vision is by hiring a diverse workforce that reflects the communities that we serve. Kaiser Permanente Northwest employs approximately 10,000 employees and has an annual attrition rate of about 8% or 800 employees per year. In 2013, we've increased our hiring because we're opening a brand new medical center in Hillsboro, Oregon. This medical center includes the hiring of 900 employees. To date, we've hired 95% of the employees for this medical center, and over 25% of the new hires are racially diverse. Kaiser Permanente's ability to hire a diverse workforce depends on our ability to find qualified and highly skilled candidates. Funding Back to Work Oregon, Certified Work Ready Communities, and the Employer Workforce Training Fund will aid businesses in hiring qualified talent. In particular, the Certified Work Ready Communities portion of this bill is a way to attract and grow business based on the skills of their workforce by aligning the economic development needs of Oregon communities. An investment in CWRC will mean that at least two-thirds of Oregon counties will be certified work-ready within 3 years. Secondly, this bill will fund the Employer Workforce Training Fund. This fund is a flexible, responsive resource for training Oregon's workforce, driven by what companies need. The emphasis of these funds are to upgrade the skills of the workforce in order to increase productivity, keep Oregon business viable and competitive, and build transferable skills for Oregon's workforce. Investment in these funds and these workforce programs is vital. These programs have already demonstrated success, as Andrew described in his testimony. We need to maintain and fully support these programs so that businesses have a skilled workforce and Oregon remains competitive. Despite improvement in our economy, there remains over 170,000 Oregonians unemployed. Reducing the unemployment rate for Oregonians is key to building strong and viable communities. The investment opportunity provided under House Bill 3038 provides support for critical programs to build a stronger workforce, increasing Oregon's ability to compete, and to ensure that Oregonians are able to build strong communities. Just like Kaiser Permanente's vision to provide high-quality, affordable health care to the communities we serve, I urge your support of this bill to enable the state of Oregon to provide high-quality employment opportunities to our unemployed citizens, enabling them to help build strong Oregon communities. Thank you for your time this morning, and I urge your support of House Bill 3038.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dill. Questions, colleagues? Yes, Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask, well, before I ask that question, just, Andrew, who was the email from again?
It was from a manufacturing company.
Oh, I was just trying to trick you.
Oh, you're trying to trick me.
No, my question is for anybody and all of you on the panel. We're concerned about everybody that's not working right now, but I'm especially interested in the connection between those we keep hearing about that have given up. Do you feel like these programs are an encouragement to those folks who have given up? They don't show up in the stats, but they're very important.
Good. Yeah. Well, let me just jump. One of the interesting things is how do all of these different programs sort of fit together? And something that we've found with the National Career Readiness Certificate, it has become the most popular service that's offered through our WorkSource system in the Portland metropolitan area. We had somewhere as of up 25,000 people pursuing one of these NCRCs. And when you look at the people who are doing that, many of them are low income, low skilled, have been out of the labor force for a long time. And the question is, why are they doing this? And it's because they realize that it's a tangible product that they can turn to, and it sort of, it creates motivation because it's frankly not that hard to get to a certain level, and it motivates them to get to another level. And so what we've done is we've combined that NCRC sort of basic foundational skill building and then connected that to opportunities through Back to Work, through the OJT program. So we're prioritizing those kinds of higher level occupational skill services for those people who are showing the motivation to reconnect through this NCRC program. So I think that this is a tremendous carrot for people who have been discouraged and feel like they don't have opportunities, because as we're able to also build some credibility with employers and get more employers acknowledging that, wow, if you come with that skill set, I really want to have a look at you. So they're seeing real opportunities as well on the back end. So I think these are great, and especially for people who have been discouraged and who have not been connected to the labor market.
Thank you.
I would agree with that. It does make it tangible. I went through the process myself, unfortunately, because I was in that unemployed position. It boosted that confidence level. I mean, I'm a college graduate, and it still made a difference to me to successfully achieve that certificate and go, okay, that was a good refresher. That makes me feel ready to step out there. So it is a service. It also, I think, takes that concept of, we all talk about transferable skills. Well, you know, after a while, you go, blah, 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 right? What's a transferable skill? That's the way my company looks at that NCRC. If you're showing and demonstrating those are the transferable skills from any profession that we're looking for. We want that basic skill set. We've decided that we need to be the trainer. We need those basic skill sets so that we know what we're training with, actually.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cook. Let me come at that question from sort of the opposite direction, and that is from the employer's perspective. You know, we talk a lot here about this is a jobs bill, that's a jobs bill. I mean, we need to be creating jobs, and a lot of our legislation is focused in that direction. Is there evidence that a program like Back to Work Oregon enhances the ability of employers to open up new positions?
From the OJT situation, absolutely. I mean, it's helped us tremendously. The other thing that's helped us is the employer workforce training programs, those things that help us become more effective and productive within our businesses and able to take advantage of the opportunity, have the setup reductions. That's what helps us develop the demand, and we are able to pull new employees in. We have 3 temp-to-hires going, in process right now, and it's extremely beneficial to be able to perform these and to have the communication with our workforce investment boards and the on-the-job training, all of those things together. No one part of this can stand alone. It is truly a combined effort.
Thank you very much. Rip Gallegos.
Yeah, again, I want to thank the panel. And share that, in full disclosure, that the new Kaiser Hospital is in my district, and so I appreciate all the jobs that it brought. But also to, since this is higher education as well, also disclose that my Maya, my lab mixed dog, got a scholarship to become a therapy dog under contract to Kaiser Hospital.
Oh, great.
Oh. So.
Excellent. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all about affordability here. And so.
And working dogs.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Mr. Chair, we can hear from the commissioner. Is the commissioner going to speak?
She's not signed up, but we can hear from her. We have both the commissioner and we have Agnes Balassa, the governor's workforce policy advisor, if you have specific questions about the program.
No, sir, about the bill.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much, panel.
Thank you.
You've been very helpful. Okay, why don't we bring up Agnes and Cam then? Yeah, we'll come back. Okay, fire away, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if everyone doesn't know, the chair is excited because and sparkling because Connecticut women won the national championship last year. But Carolina's back number one in baseball.
So that's good.
And they're number one in soccer again.
For now.
Have some order.
Is there a question in there, Mr. Chair?
Clearly they didn't.
Commissioner, my experience on the Ways and Means Committee, I think the testimony we heard, hopefully everyone on the board thinks that those are good programs. But the bill is strictly a budget, as Representative Greenlick talked. spoke to, it just asked the Ways and Means to put money in there. So we're really not having as a policy discussion where we think the emphasis should be. I'm a big supporter of the National Certificate of Readiness certificate, and I'm assuming all we're seeing here in the bill is community programs. Is that NCRC, and will a lot of that money be going to issue those certificates? And tell me about the back to work programs and the Oregon Employment Workforce Training Fund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, we have provided a fiscal impact statement for this bill.
Oh, Tim, could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think this was my first time. Kim Preuss, I'm the director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. So I think the bill you have in front of you is fairly bare bones, but we do have a fiscal impact statement that details where the resources would go for the National Career Readiness Certificate, for certified communities, for back to work, and for sector strategies. And I can run through those dollar amounts, but essentially I think these two will marry up when they get to Ways and Means.
Mrs. Cox, do we have that? We just have this.
I have a fiscal from LFO.
And is it in the...
We have it here. It should be at the top of your stack for 3038.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you can...
Mrs. Cox, this is the one you...
Yes.
Have the amounts.
Right, right.
Chair Dembro, Representative Wisnett, I can certainly get that to you. These are... the back-to-work program is the on-the-job training program that the previous panel was talking about, which combines the National Career Readiness Certificate with on-the-job training. That is a program that the department has experience with and is in the governor's budget, and the addition that's in House Bill 3038 would be an additional investment. We have found that to be a particularly effective program in this in our current economic situation, where employers are looking for, with the tight labor market, they're looking for individuals with a certain set of skills and sometimes a very specific set of skills.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I'm still so now we're saying this is additional money to what the governor's put in his budget. How about the co-chair's budget? Where are the co-chairs? Or did they put it what the bud? Because we're asking, you know, again, I don't understand why we're going this way, as the Representative Greenlee talked about. We as a policy committee, we want to say, yes, we support this program, and this is the most important, but I don't understand what we're doing here.
We've been asked, as I said, Rep. Wisnett, to explore the policy itself of the Back to Work Oregon program and the way that it marries on-the-job training with the National Career Readiness Certificate, and then leads to hopefully the creation of work-ready communities. The what's being asked is that we, as a workforce development committee, do we support that kind of thing? Do we want to see more of it?
Mr. Chair, this bill doesn't say I support these and I want these fully funded or funded extra. It just says we're going to ask the Ways and Means to appropriate a certain amount of money in there. We don't prioritize nothing here.
Yes, but Rep. Wisnett, when we send this bill down to them with a due pass recommendation, they will take this very seriously, and they've made the request for us to vet this program here in this setting. So that's what we're doing here. Yes. Agnes, let me ask you, the point that I just made about the marrying together of the on-the-job training with the National Career Readiness Certificate, that is kind of a unique wrinkle here to this program. And what, why not just on-the-job training? Why the work-ready community, National Career Readiness?
Representative Dembro, members of the committee, obviously these programs are a priority for our office, too, because we did put some resources in the governor's recommended budget for these types of programs.
Agnes, could you introduce
yourself? Agnes Balassa, governor's workforce policy advisor. Like Cam, this is my first time testifying today. this morning, yeah. I think what makes these programs unique is that they're not just programs, they're actually strategies. They do more than just invest for a short amount of time in a set of activities. They're actually about a larger strategic effort to marry up economic development with workforce development. What makes the Back to Work Oregon program unique is that we assure a level of foundational skills for those individuals so that they can grow within a company. And then the on-the-job training, the company is responsible for providing that, and they work with... they don't have a set training plan for the individual. They actually get help in developing that. One of the things we found in Oregon is because so many of our companies are small companies, they don't typically have HR departments. They don't typically have organized training routes for their employees. And so the programs like this have helped companies implement strategies to better onboard future employees while at the same time helping people who've in many cases been long-term unemployed get back to work. Expansion of that into work-ready communities makes it an economic development strategy where we can start talking about what are the skills of our communities and how do we invest to assure that those skills can help us build competitive companies and bring more companies into our communities. So all of this is meant to be tied together, and a lot of it is, as Karen Cook said, all this is ties together, and all of it is also meant to recognize the small business nature of our state, where you don't have a lot of large companies able to tap into massive training programs. What we try to do is make this as user-friendly and as simple for the employer as possible, as well as for the individual to access. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll call up Jerry Turner and Ron Britt, please.
Said we support, we encourage high-bound funding. Have we begun doing it?
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Chair Dembrough and members of the committee, I'm Jerry Turner. I started Pioneer Pump, so I'm the founder and president of Pioneer Pump. I started it in December of 1998 with three other people. And in 1999, we did $1.4 million in sales. In 2011, we did $70 million in sales. I have sister companies that I started, and two of them in the UK, one of them in South Africa. We're in the process of opening up an office in Melbourne, Australia, and we're going to do a JV in Balikpapan, Borneo. So that's in Indonesia, if you're not sure. But anyway, we've been fortunate to be able to participate in a lot of these programs that have been put on, and it's really helped our company grow and expand. One of them was the on-the-job training. In 2011, we bought four CNC machines. The capital investment was about $1.5 million. But more importantly, we needed people to run them. And, you know, we this new equipment, we try to run it two shifts, so we're running, you know, 20 hours a day, roughly, 18, 20 hours a day. And we've got 85 employees that we now employ in Canby. We built 90,000 square feet of new facilities, state-of-the-art facilities on 4.5 acres in the new Canby Industrial Park. And without these programs, I think it would have been much more difficult for us to find the people that we needed to be able to support our growth. I mean, we were growing at 46% compound growth every year, and it's pretty hard to stay on top of that for 13 years. And we had the support of the state and these programs on the job training. Was really one of the things that helped our CNC equipment. We had Bill and Tom from Clackamas Community College identify people for the program, and they utilized those funds to help get them in, get them trained on the equipment, and it's worked out great. We have very few people that leave the organization. Our average wage is about $55,000 a year for our hourly employees, which is about 60 employees in Canby. And Our salary, average salary wage is about $100,000 a year, so we're providing family wage jobs. And like I said, we lose very, very few people. And this tough economy has really made it difficult to find good quality people. And we don't mind spending some of our dollars in training. So the Employer Workforce Training Fund, you know, you've invested $3.2 million a year for the last 3 years in that program, but the private sector's invested $7 million a year. So I think it's a win-win for the state. One last thing is that for some reason, we've become kind of featured on the television programs. So if you've seen Gold Rush or Bering Sea Gold or Yukon Gold, they featured our pumps on those shows.
And it's all because of Back to Work Oregon, right?
Exactly. Yes,
thank you.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Rep. Wisman.
So do you support the legislation in this building to prevent mining?
No.
Thank you.
I'll communicate that to the appropriate chair. Mr. Britt.
I can do that.
Hi, good morning. My name is Ron Britt, and I'm the Director of Human Resources at Benchmade Knife Company in Oregon City. I'm also a private sector member of the Workforce Investment Council Board of Directors serving Clackamas County. I have served in board leadership positions and was a member of Governor Kitzhaber's workforce transition team working towards the NCRC. So I have a little bit of background on there. I'm here today to talk about the House Bill 3038 and why it's a critical investment for Oregon. As the Director of Human Resources at Benchmade Knife Company, I engage with the public workforce system to meet my company's hiring needs. We've utilized the National Career Readiness Certificate in many capacities over the years, and our company has participated in the Back to Work Oregon program. We work with the public workforce system on a regular basis. As a representative of the Board of Directors of the Workforce Board in Clackamas County, I can report that companies in our region have found overwhelming success with the Back to Work Oregon program. Employers report that the program enables them to hire sooner than they may have otherwise, and that the assistance from staff running the BTWO program has helped identify hiring needs. Interestingly, one of the unanticipated benefits of the program is that it has helped companies better identify and refine training programs for employees, which benefits both the businesses and the employees. Additionally, my company, Benchmade Knife Company, was a recipient of current workforce training support, the Employed Worker Training Funds, EWTF, back in 2009. With these funds, a workforce development plan was implemented that included hard skills, soft skills, and lean manufacturing skills training. During this time, almost all of Benchmade's 135 employees benefited from this investment. Over 40 college credits were earned by many of these participants. As an example of the success of the investment, we partnered with the Clackamas Community College to develop a targeted training program for our customer service department. It was a six-week, 56-hour program. We called it the High Impact Customer Service Training Program. It was on-site at Benchmade headquarters, and the customer service supervisor stated that even after the first day of training, the program provided an immediate return on investment, creating a foundation to build knowledge, attitudes, and skills for delivering outstanding customer service.
Thank you very much. Questions, colleagues? I do have a question for both of you. And again, you know, just sort of looking at this from the deep policy perspective, there are people who feel that on-the-job training is something that should be bearing the cost of it should be entirely the responsibility of the employer. And there are other people who feel that, you know, on the opposite spectrum, that, you know, businesses are paying significant business taxes, and this is a cost that really the state should pick up. The Back to Work Oregon is, you know, as Mr. Turner mentioned, you know, it's a mix. And how do you respond to both of those extremes?
I'm a people person, and I recognize that we don't all learn the same way. I helped start CASE, Clackamas Academy of Industrial Science, and it's really become very crystal clear to me that we don't all learn the same way. And I think I'm a great example of that. I went to college because my parents wanted me to be there. Then I went in the Navy for 4 years. So when I got out, I went to Clackamas Community College, got my associate's degree, then went on to Portland State and became a successful business person. And it's I think one of the things that sets us apart from the rest of the world is our innovation and our ability to think outside the box. And there's a lot of countries where people don't come to work and think about, can I do this better? And, you know, I think the on-the-job training allows the employees to, people that are good quality but need some additional education to be able to master a skill or another job. And so I think it's important that we have some support there that allows us to pay them maybe more than we would have paid them otherwise to get that training.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Well, you know, frankly, I think it does bring up interesting philosophical questions around that, you know, and who should really be or who should bear the cost of that. You know, there's complicated decisions in terms of when you want to hire or not. Additional resources certainly play a critical factor in that. I think it probably, speaking to a comment made earlier, has a larger impact with the smaller employers, where it may make a difference between whether or not to hire now or hire later if they have, because the OJT is basically a reimbursement of wages for partial wages during the first portion of their of hiring a new employee. So it may impact particularly the smaller employers' decisions on whether or not to hire now versus later. It may impact the decision on whether or not to hire somebody that is not fully qualified in the job at this point in time, but it's the person that is available. And so, again, do you invest? And if there is some resources available, that also could be a decision that impacts those employers. And the program also requires, the way that the payout works is that there's a portion that's paid periodically as a new incumbent goes through training and becomes proficient. And there are resources available through the program that support employers in putting together those training programs. And so, you know, for smaller employers in particular that may not have the resources and, you know, the human resources staff or other resources internal to their company, that's been a huge benefit for some people in helping to create. This is how a training program can look and how to most quickly bring somebody from, you know, from start to proficient as quickly as possible.
I think it really helps people that are on unemployment or some other assistance to get off of that and get back to work. And the quicker we get people back to work, the less chance that they'll stay on the unemployment rolls or, you know, public assistance a lot longer.
Okay, thank you very much, both of you gentlemen. Okay, that's all we have. Anybody else here want to speak to this this bill or this policy area? Okay, see not. Close this public hearing on House Bill 3038, and I will open a work session on House Bill 3038. Vice Chair Hucker.
Yes, Chair Dembro, I move House Bill 3038 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Harker moves House Bill 3038 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion, colleagues? Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am concerned not about the content, not about the good testimony, but about the process. And I have to confess, I'm not sure if I've seen a bill like this before, and I don't understand the Ways and Means connection. So I've got a reservation. But it has nothing to do with the substance of what we've talked about today.
Thank you. Rep. Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and people in the audience here and people watching, the bill simply says they're appropriated to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for the biennium beginning July the 1st, 2013, out of the general fund, the following amounts for the following purposes. One, certified work-ready community programs. Two, deposits in the Oregon Employment Workforce Training Fund, back-to-work programs in Oregon, and it's no determination of money. As a policy member of a policy committee, I cannot vote for this bill because I want as much money as possible there. Community college is already $75 million underfunded, and I cannot pass this as a policy committee member. Even though I support the program fully and understand the value of it, I'm a no vote, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further discussion? Yes, Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I might second my good colleague's comments. We know the governor's made this a priority. We know that there's some money, I think, that's been earmarked for this purpose. I'm not sure what this bill will do in terms of enhancing that investment. So rather than put more stuff on the already crowded plate at Ways and Means, I'll be a no.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Huffman.
I don't know if this will help or hurt. Because of the respect that I have with my colleagues on this committee. Would it help, gentlemen, if I said, trust me?
And I wasn't looking for a comment back, Mr. Chair, in as a member of Ways and Means and the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, I have been and will continue to be working closely on these programs, if that helps. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair Huffman. Vice Chair Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lest this sentiment be viewed as partisan, I find this a bit baffling also. Rep. Greenlink has already raised the question on the D side of the aisle, but I'll trust you, and I'll vote yes for this, but it is baffling to me.
Thank you. Colleagues and members of the audience, sometimes we get into sort of, I'm not going to call it turf warfare or whatever, between the ways and means process and the policy side. We wanted to be able to send a strong statement of support for this program and programs like it, and therefore we held this hearing today. And I understand that some of you have concerns about the process, and I'm sorry about that. I hope that we, as a committee, can send a strong statement of support for the policy here of Back to Work Oregon, the notion of taking unemployed workers, giving them on-the-job training in the workplace, incenting employers to invest in workforce development and moving this state's economy forward. So, Cassie, would you please call the roll?
We're all on board with that.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Forsyth?
Yes.
Representative Greenlink?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Woodman?
No.
Vice Chair Harker?
Yes.
Vice Chair Huffman?
Yes.
Chair Dembo?
Yes. The measure passes. It goes to Ways and Means. I will close the work session on House Bill 3038. And colleagues, let's take a look at this list of other items on the list of work sessions for today. House Bill 2152, the one having to do with the reporting of workforce ratios for community colleges and universities, is not yet ready for us to vote on. The community college side, we have agreement there, and we're actually, as we speak, the university people are meeting to get this wrapped up. So I'm going to carry over. Well, I'm going to open. Do I have to open? No. Okay, I'm going to carry over the work session on House Bill 2152, and it will hopefully come to us soon. Okay, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2154. No, this isn't the one I was looking for. Did I? Okay. Let me, do we have the bill? Okay, Victoria, read, why don't you read the bill and tell us what we have here with the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2154 requires community college boards to form achievement compact advisory committees and specifies membership and duties. Declares an emergency effective on passage, and we have just received -4 amendments on House Bill 2154.
Okay. And we also had -2s. Did we ever adopt those? I don't think we did.
No, I'm sorry. You want both?
We have not.
You want both sets of amendments?
Colleagues, I don't think. All right, let me explain to you. I think we have a problem. I think we're not going to be able to vote on this today. But let me explain what the -2 amendments do. First of all, okay, did I open the work session?
I'm not sure. Go ahead.
All right.
I believe you did.
Yeah. Okay. We are now in work session for House Bill 2154. Okay, you'll remember this had to do with the Achievement Compact Advisory Committees when the bill was passed to create the Achievement Compacts last year. Advisory committees were included for K-12 schools, but not colleges and universities. And so a bill was put forth, House Bill 2154, that would extend that to colleges and universities as well. The original bill that we heard did not include universities. It only included community colleges. So we needed to have an amendment to add community colleges. In addition to that, there were some concerns that the way that the makeup of the advisory committees was stated was overly restrictive, and so I asked for an amendment that would make it more general. We also heard some testimony that there are already standing committees to do this work in many of our colleges and universities, and this would be an unnecessary duplication. So we've amended the bill to indicate that and you'll see it at the top of page 2, if a community college or public university has a standing committee that includes these representatives, the president may designate the standing committee as the Achievement Compact Advisory Committee. There was one further problem that came to my attention late yesterday, and to be honest, I'm not sure how I never noticed this, but on line 7, again, if you're looking at the -2 amendments, section 1, subsection 2, each Achievement Compact Advisory Committee shall be responsible for developing an Achievement Compact and ensuring that the Achievement Compact is implemented. It's not the job of the Advisory Committee to implement the Achievement Compact, and so I requested an amendment that put a period after Achievement Compact and got rid of the implementation piece. And we have just received the -4 amendments that were intended to do that, but as I read these amendments, that I'm not sure that it does that. It says delete line 8 and insert Achievement Compact.
No. Not quite right.
So I don't think we're quite there yet, gentlemen. Why don't we, let's hope we can get this fixed and get it wrapped up quickly. But, actually what we could do today is adopt the -2s. Or we could, perhaps it would be better just to have the whole thing fixed, and then we only need one amendment that we can adopt. Sorry for...
Let's do that.
Thank you for allowing me to think out loud here.
This energy
work session.
Carried over.
Did they send a fiscal with this one?
No.
Anyway, you probably don't have a fiscal for it.
Right. Okay, so hopefully we can quickly wrap this up once it comes back in its proper form. All right, so I'm going to carry over the work session on House Bill 2154. Sorry to those of you who've been waiting for this, but you have to wait a little longer. House Bill 2178, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2178. Victoria, why don't you remind us of what this one is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2178 provides for education loans to students pursuing advanced degrees necessary to manage medical clinics, provides loan forgiveness to such students who agree to manage medical clinics in underserved areas. It does have a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. We have received an indeterminate needs further analysis fiscal report on it.
Thank you, Victoria. Colleagues, this is the bill you may remember Representative Boone brought to us, I think most of us agree this is a great program. Is there any money to pay for it? I think clearly there is, at this time, no general fund money to pay for it, but it did include an ability to take outside money. Representative Boone has indicated to me that she has identified a potential source of funding through the U.S. Department of Agriculture that may or may not pan out, and has requested that we send this down to Ways and Means, and in the hopes that that funding can be found. Rep. Greenlick.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll vote for this, but I'm frankly skeptical that this particular career path needs extra support compared to other career paths in the health profession. I think the issue in other things is to, for example, move doctors into primary care and things like that. In this case, this is a subsidy for people moving into rural areas, and that's a good thing generally, but as the person testified, the person who's stimulated this bill, he could make a lot of money working in Portland, but he chooses to work 60 miles away from Portland, and therefore he ought to be subsidized. I mean, okay, and I'll vote for it, but I'm not convinced it's really very high priority compared to other issues in personnel in the healthcare field.
Thank you. Yeah, I think just remember back to the testimony that the notion was that the rural areas need high skill, high quality administrators as well. And if this is what it takes to help induce people with that background to move to the rural areas, this would help.
Well, I didn't see any evidence that it is what it takes to induce people. I mean, I didn't see evidence of shortages. I mean, I've been hearing about all sorts of personnel. Nobody came to me and said, we just can't get anybody to manage our
clinic. Put that on record, please.
I mean, it just isn't, I think it isn't a significant issue.
Quick. It's not a bad issue.
Thank you. Yes, Rep. Gorsuch.
I haven't seen this report, but somebody was telling me yesterday, so it's purely anecdotal at this point, that I believe it's the hospital at Umatilla has actually had to downgrade itself to less than a hospital, medical center perhaps, a medical clinic, because of the lack of professionals to staff the hospital. So, I mean, that would kind of tie in with what we're discussing here, if true.
The lack of administrative staff?
No, I thought it was medical staff.
Oh, yeah, that isn't what we're talking about here.
Not at all? It's
no,
not
this
linked
is about
to
this is just clinic managers.
Oh, okay.
Clinic
administrators. I thought it was both. My
but
mistake.
I was impressed you pronounced Umatilla correctly.
Thank you very much, even though I got the concept wrong. That's
Rep. Johnson.
It's rural. I appreciate it. Share Rep. Greenlick's thoughts about this to some extent, but I would also point out, I think, that part of the problem why it's difficult to attract and retain skilled medical personnel in rural Oregon is because the
economy is absolutely devastated, and I really wish that our legislature could focus more attempt on trying to help our rural economies grow and attract good-paying jobs so that people can afford to live in these communities. Mm-hmm. So I just get that on the record, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Back to work, Oregon. Yes, Rep. Gorsuch.
And I just want to echo what Rep. Johnson said. We focus, I think, far too much on the Portland metropolitan area. And if you think about forestry and you think about medical and you think about a whole bunch of things, we do have a tendency to forget the rest of the state.
Let's hold hands.
This is fabulous.
Okay.
I'm certainly dealt with the health care.
All right. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Cassie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Gales?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Forsyth?
Yes.
Representative Greenlee?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Huffman?
Aye.
Chair Dembrough?
Aye. Okay, the measure passes, and motion passes, and this bill will go down to Ways and Means. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2178, open a work session on House Bill 2742. Victoria, remind us about this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2742 prohibits public universities from discriminating against students on the basis that student was not awarded a standard high school diploma or general education development certificate. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay. Colleagues, you remember this one. Representative Gelser brought this bill to us, and we had testimony about it. There are amendments to this, no?
The Dash 3 amendments create a new section that state that nothing in Section 2 of the Act may be construed to limit or otherwise prevent a public university from setting academic or other requirements to measure preparedness or qualification to participate, limiting the number of individuals who are not seeking academic credit or granting credit-seeking students priority enrollment in an academic activity. My understanding is that the Oregon University System no longer objects to the bill based on that amendment.
That is my understanding, too.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Can we put it on the record to ask someone to testify?
Ms. Burns. Thank you, Representative. Ms. Burns, always welcome.
Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff for OUS. Yes, we are supportive of this legislation. We have handled all of our concerns through amendments. Representative Gelser has worked closely with us, and we are comfortable with the bill moving forward as it is amended. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Rep. Gagos.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not familiar with some of the admissions policy. Can you give me an example of what an alternative certificate might be, other than, you know, GED or?
Chair Dembrough, Representative Gallegos, there's a modified diploma now offered in Oregon. I think Representative Gelser was very involved in the development of that. And I'm not very familiar with the requirements for a modified diploma, but my understanding is that this legislation allows for those who have a modified diploma to be considered to take courses at institutions regardless that are not for credit and not feel as though they are dissuaded from taking any credits regardless of the type of diploma they receive.
Rep. Greenlee, then Rep. Johnson.
Yeah, let me see if I understand. This isn't about admission to universities for regular programs. It's simply about taking, auditing a class.
Chair Dembrough, Representative Greenlee, yes, this is for not the classes that are not for credit. So individuals in the community can come in and participate in those classes and not have to go through typical admission standards.
And just following up, my understanding is that, you know, if there are issues with the student disrupting the class or, you know, somehow interfering in the successful, you know, running of the class, that the student can be asked to leave, right?
Chair Dembrough, that is correct. We always have the rulemaking authority and the authority on our campuses to protect our students or to provide for their safety in any way. So, again, we're very comfortable with legislation. We think that it will allow for a larger number of folks to participate in credits, non-for-credit classes. And as you recall from the testimony provided by Representative Gelser, she used herself as an example that would have benefited from a program like this. So we're very supportive.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please, Rep. Greenlee.
Right now, without this bill, we are discriminating against people. We only allow people in to audit a class that have a regular diploma.
Representative Dembrough, Representative Greenlee, it is my understanding that right now there are not very, this is something that depends on the institution, that they can allow individuals to come in based on their admissions committee's judgment. What you're doing is effectively identifying that these groups are encouraged, supported, should feel welcome coming into these classes. It is my understanding that we are not currently discriminating. This is based entirely on one circumstance that took place at Southern Oregon University, and this particular legislation will allow for individuals who have modified diplomas to compete on the same playing field for classes that are not for credit.
Representative Johnson.
Bridget, is OUS's position then that they believe there's a need for this legislation and they're promoting it in that fashion, or are you simply moved to the point where you're not in opposition to the legislation as you were during the original hearing?
Representative Dembrough, Representative Johnson, we're comfortable with the legislation based on the stories that we've heard and the example that we saw at Southern Oregon University and what we heard from Representative Gelser. It's clear that she represents a very clear constituency that is impacted by these bills and sees the need. Our interest is making sure that we have the rulemaking authority to be able to protect our institutions based on accreditation standards and be able to kind of vouch for the degrees that we offer. We're comfortable. We don't have any challenge to this legislation at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mrs. Burns, I'm glad you're saying you're comfortable with the bill as it's amended. I would have trouble if I were the chancellor, and discrimination is not defined in the bill. Do you have policies? Is there policies in the university system that define discrimination?
Representative Dembrough, Representative Wisnant, I believe my legal counsel would best answer that question. And so, we have a variety of civil protections that we provide to our students, our faculty, our staff. The relating clause on this bill, that originally gave us trepidation because it's just challenging to define discrimination and make it not seem as though it's indicating that there is an offense taking place. But that's the relating clause that we have, and we're just doing the best we can with it.
It has a broad relating clause, but the bill itself is quite specific about this particular issue.
Chair Dembrough, yes. Yeah. It's very, very narrow, and we don't see negative impacts on our campuses as a result of this legislation.
So your testimony is that your legal counsel looked at this and didn't have any problem with the bill. From a legal standpoint, possible suits against the university system or any of the university institutions.
Chair Dembrough, Representative Wisnant, yes, our legal team worked very closely with Representative Gelser to identify amendments to the legislation that would allow us to feel comfortable from a legal perspective, from an admissions and an accreditation perspective. At the end of the day, we still have rulemaking authority to be able to define the folks who we're going to allow into our campuses. We still have the ability to discern based on standards that are developed at the institution and statewide. So we feel very comfortable that we'll still be able to determine the folks that will be able to participate in our classes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none. Cassie, I'm sorry. Do we have a motion?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Which one are we on? 2742.
Should be okay.
I'm not here to give it to you. Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. So we have to do the amendment first.
Are you okay with this?
It's probably about as the best. Chair Dembrough, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated March 27th, 2013.
Vice Chair Hoffman moves the Dash 3 amendments dated April 8th, 2013. Colleagues, let's stand down for a moment, please. Okay, we're back in session. Let's see, we have a motion on the floor to adopt the Dash 3 amendments. Is there any discussion of the Dash 3 amendments? Any objection to the Dash 3 amendments? Okay, seeing none, the Dash 3 amendments are adopted. Colleagues, I'm going to carry this bill over, okay? And so close the work session on House Bill 2742. Okay, colleagues, in the rush of our enthusiasm to get the medical clinic supervisor bill passed, we ignored the need to have a motion to pass that. And so I'm going to
open
a work session on House Bill 2178. And forget everything that happened before. Vice Chair Harker.
Easily done. Chair Dembrough, I move House Bill 2178 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Harker moves House Bill 2178 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Colleagues, is there any further discussion? Colleagues, is there any objection to this bill? Seeing none, the motion passes. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2178. And where are we? I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2958. No. Well, I'm sorry. Take that back. I'm going to open a work session on. No.
2898. We don't have a fiscal yet.
Oh.
So you might want to go with
2958
and also Representative
Elsers here. Okay, I'm going to. Yes, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2958. Victoria, could you remind us of what this bill is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2958 requires community colleges to distribute specified information to public school students in grades 11 and 12 annually, requires representatives of State Board of Education and Higher Education Coordinating Commission to meet regularly for purpose of improving coordination between public secondary schools and community colleges, declares emergency, is effective July 1, 2013, came back with amendment fiscal, and we have, let's see, dash one amendments, which should be before you.
Sure. And the amendments ask us to delete UDID. Mm-hmm. I assume that goes with distributed. Okay. yes, colleagues, this was, you know, upon further review with RepComp, it was clear that the community colleges could not themselves be expected to distribute the material to the K-12 students, but rather they would make it available for distribution to the K-12 students. So hence the need for that change. Vice Chair Harker.
Chair Dembrough, I move to adopt these dash one amendments dated March 27th, 2013.
Chair Harker moves the dash one amendments dated March 27th, 2013. Any discussion of that change from UDID to SHUN? Seeing none, any objection? Okay, the amendments are adopted. Vice Chair Harker.
Chair Dembrough, I now move House Bill 2958 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Harker moves House Bill 2958 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion of this bill? Rep. Johnson.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I heartily endorse the concept of Aspire, which is really what I think this bill is focused on, which is helping high school students prepare for post-secondary life. We know the governor also heartily endorsed the concept. I believe there's additional monies earmarked to expand Aspire across the state in our school district. In fact, we're even taking Aspire down to the middle school level and so forth. So I completely support what RepComp's trying to accomplish here, but I think it's already happening, and I'm just not convinced of the need for another piece of legislation to encourage behaviors that I think are already well underway, and I know our colleges are sold out trying to do all that they can do to network with their school districts across the state, so I will respectfully be voting no.
Any further discussion? Rep. Lisnett.
Mr. Chair, I'll be a no to basically what Representative Johnson's saying, that until I see that the community colleges are funded at the level that I want, that I couldn't support this additional expense in time. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with half of what you said, Rep. Lisnett.
I bet I do.
Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Cassie, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Gallegos?
Yes.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Greenland?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Wisnett?
No.
Vice Chair Harker?
Yes.
Vice Chair Huffman?
No.
Chair Dembrough?
Yes. The motion passes. We'll have RepComp carry it. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2958. Colleagues, House Bill 2898, we don't have the fiscal for it yet, so we're going to have to carry that one over as well. There was an amendment to it, and that's we don't have the fiscal. Before we close, colleagues, you may have received, or you should have received in your email box, the Secretary of State has done an audit of the Oregon University system. My intention is after we get through our the bills that we have to work and maybe have a little spring break, we will call in the secretary and the audit people to give us so that we can have a full presentation and discussion of that. There likely will be a reference to it in our Friday discussion on governance because one piece of it is calling for governance changes that, frankly, House Bill 3120 is intended to address. So, you know, I may point to that section, but we need a full, you know, full conversation around it with people from the Secretary of State's office and from OUS. So we can look forward to that.
Mr. Chair, when will we be working that bill? When's
the
schedule for?
Well, we have a work session scheduled for Friday, and there will be a further amendment, and that will be our chance to, you know, kind of weigh in for sort of a final time, and then it'll be further amended for the last day we can work, which will be next Wednesday.
Well, that's making it tight if somebody screws up on that day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What is going to be clear is that we have a good conversation around it, and there will be means for further amendments to happen that will address our concerns. So I promise you that. Okay, colleagues, with that.
Before we adjourn.
Oh, before
let's
we adjourn.
Make sure that we say we are carrying over. These are the bills,
yeah.
Right?
Let's do that. Okay. Colleagues, we're carrying over House Bills 2898. 2154, 2152, and 27. What is that? 42.
2742. We amended, right? But we didn't vote it out, so we need to carry it over.
Right. Okay. Everything's carried over that needs to be carried over, and we are adjourned.